Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. I am joined today by a wonderful asset to Mito Action. Her name is April, and some of you may be familiar. That name may ring a bell to some of you who are involved with Mito Action, but she is a true Mito warrior, a Mito champion for the organization, and I'm really excited for her to share her story with all of you. So welcome, April. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcy. Great to be here.
I always like to start on these personal journey episodes with you just having some time to talk about your mitochondrial disease journey and how you eventually got involved with Mito Action. So should we start there?
Let's start at the beginning.
Let's do it.
Obviously, the beginning is I was born with it, but Didn't know, like most people, had very obscure, random health problems all through my childhood. I certainly see signs now looking back, you know, kind of standard, but made it through high school okay. I started like missing a lot of days of school in high school. I remember this period of time where it seemed like it was impossible to wake up on a Monday morning and get there in time. And I don't know, seems like kind of a classic like high schooler thing, but I was really motivated student and a really good student. But I just remember this feeling of just like this deep, deep fatigue that had started in high school. And I, you know, looking back, I realized I was doing way too much for mitochondrial body and brain. I was taking AP classes and I was on the varsity soccer team and I did dance classes too, like ballet and tap and all this. So I was just way too busy for limited energy. But, you know, I didn't know back then, like nobody even, I didn't understand your body only had like a certain amount of energy. So I just pushed through, graduated high school, pushed through, you know, my early 20s though, more stuff started happening. Started just getting really sick for like long periods of time with like random viruses. Like my immune system was just wasn't as good as everybody else's, you know, things I was noticing. And got into college and it was about a year into my program because I did all the prerequisite stuff, you know, which was a solid year. And then my program was 2 years. It was about a year into the program and my health just like hit a wall. It just like something happened one day. And I've never been the same. My first symptoms were vertigo, just a lot of vertigo it came on one day and it just lasted for 2 days straight. The entire world just kept spinning. Again, I had had some funky stuff going on. I'd had a heart arrhythmia going on. My doctor was treating that with a beta blocker. Like all these other random things had started stacking up. But I just remember like that particular day when that vertigo started, this like knowing came over me that like, I know there's something like deeply wrong with my body. Something is very not right, you know? And of course run to my doctor the next day. And the initial thing is like, they're thinking multiple sclerosis, like, cause I was in the, you know, Caucasian woman in between those ages that it's most prevalent and whatnot. So straight off to go get an MRI, right? You know, and that's where the journey started. Then it took 5 years of seeing, I counted when I finally got diagnosed, it was almost 60 doctors. I believe it was like 59 doctors I saw.
59 doctors?
Yep.
Did you feel like a ping pong ball?
I just felt desperate because by this time, I had already now pushed through a solid year of college and my program wasn't easy. I graduated as dental hygienist and people don't understand that dental hygienists actually earn more credit hours than nurses. It's a very hard program. I graduated only, I think I was only like 10 credits short of a BS. So it was rough. And, you know, so I'd fought really hard just to graduate. And then I was desperately trying to hold on to my career. And here I was brand new in my new career. And I was so sick. So I was just spending any day off I got, which was only one day off every 2 weeks. And I would just pack doctor appointments in that day. Every vacation, you know, if we took time off for Christmas or this holiday or whatever, I was scheduling doctor appointments because I was just desperately trying to get answers so that I could get better. Ultimately, that didn't happen. I ended up applying for disability before I even had answers. And thankfully I was approved for disability even without the actual diagnosis though, because I had had so many other, you know, side diagnoses all kind of stacking up. It was quite an odyssey, 5 years. And finally I had seen one genetic specialist in Tampa, and she'd done some real detailed testing, and she still kind of came to the plate with like, I can't tell you what you have, but there's something metabolic going on, because this is off, this is off, this is off. You have a carnitine deficiency, I can tell you that. That's certainly making you not feel well. Here's a prescription for carnitine. You know, and then I just did independent research from there. I just took it from there.
Did you suggest to them?
Not at first, because I went home with this information. It was like a 3-hour drive to get to Tampa for me at that time. I went home with all this information and the carnitine prescription, started that, everything. And right away, the very first carnitine tab I took was like instant, like, whoosh, I don't know, like my whole brain just like, just had this crazy like wave feeling, like I could... It, which was a little scary, because I was like, is this like an allergic reaction, or is this a good thing? You know,
is it okay for me to feel good about this?
Right. I just intuitively said like, well, if the carnitine in your body's low and you're feeling something from taking this, I'm just going to assume this is a good thing. So anyway, I did another like month or two of kind of just Google, Dr. Google. I was just Googling all the time, every single night, like for all those years. I don't think probably ever more than two nights went by where I wasn't in bed researching, trying to find answers before I went to sleep, you know. And finally, I just, mitochondrial disease, the word just popped in somewhere.
So then you suggested it to...
Well, I then searched out a mitochondrial disease specialist, which is why I ended up moving to Jacksonville, Florida, because at that time I lived somewhere else in Florida, found a good specialist here, and just moved my life here so that I could see him regularly and do whatever I could for my health. So there we go. That was 2014 when I got diagnosed. 15 years into the fight of like daily chronic mito symptoms, and 10 years into sense of knowing what the problem is, what the challenge is here, you know?
To define it a little bit more. So is the heart murmur related to your condition, to your mitochondrial condition?
It is. My nervous system in general is my hardest hit system. You know, all of us tend to seem to have the more hard hit things, eyes, ears, you know, GI system. For me, it's my nervous system and my brain. So my heart arrhythmia was just a nerve gone rogue. And we eventually had to do a cardiac ablation. They went in and cauterized the nerve. And thankfully, I haven't needed another one. It's been stable and good since that.
That's great in that regard. So now that you've come so far, and maybe in some ways you feel like you haven't come very far, but either way, I feel like that with this disease, like I arm myself with this great information and people compliment me that I'm, you know, being an advocate for myself. And I'm like, but where is it exactly getting me, you know? But what are some of the things that you struggle with today? Are you still dealing with the vertigo symptoms, or how have things kind of morphed?
Thankfully, the vertigo is pretty much non-existent now. But, you know, for me, my condition was pretty progressive. I had a downward spiral, noticeable, big step down in my health every 6 months. So ever since the original diagnosis, just every 6 months, I got worse and worse and worse. And to be honest, you know, by about 2021, things were really, really rough. My whole system was very, very badly affected. Muscle weak had progressed so much that we were in conversations about a ventilator was going to need to happen soon, because I just, you know, I would lay down to go to sleep and the muscle weakness was just so profound that I would just stop breathing many, many times a night, which was really scary. The dealing with the breathing stuff for me was the most emotionally challenging so far of all of this, you know, slowly needing a manual wheelchair and then needing a power wheelchair and like losing more and more function to walk and everything. That was certainly hard and really hard to accept. But man, once I got to that place with the breathing, it just was, whew, it was a mental challenge. But thank God, you know, thank God for MitoAction. Thank God for our Facebook group, you know, all the connections I've made. I don't know how I would have made it through that space without being able to reach out to other people, you know, because I was very afraid at that point. I was like, okay, if my breathing is this bad affected, like, am I at the end of my life? That's what was running through my head, you know. And then I'm learning from other people in our group that, you know, no, here's these people, they've been on ventilators for 7, 8, 10 years, and they're still working part-time. Like, they're still living their life, even on ventilators. So I'm like, okay, this is a thing. Apparently you just keep on living even when you need a ventilator. Something changed with my health. This was like 2021. Well, a couple of things. I got off one medication that I'd been on, and I really think that was affecting my breathing negatively. And then I also just, I just got super stubborn again. And I like took a really big, deep dive into my nutrition stuff. And I dabbled with, I wasn't able to go like full keto, but I went like sort of keto. It's like called like paleo keto, paleo slash keto. And that actually really boosted my energy again. And my breathing got better. And it got more stabilized, which was great. And then last year, one of the biggest things happened to me that's happened in my whole journey, I was approved for the expanded access for the elmethyltide drug. So I started on that October 2023. And now, for the first time in 15 years, my health is gradually getting better every single month. And I'm taking all these steps in a positive forward direction with my health again, which is just a miracle.
Wow. That has to feel so good after having so many years of feeling so defeated.
Yeah, it was incredibly hard to hold on to hope those last couple of years.
Yeah. So you're still able to take the drug right now?
Yeah, I'm in expanded access, which means I was denied for the clinical trial itself because I didn't have the actual genetic markers they were looking for. And my health was so poor that I was at risk. You know, you need to be seriously ill to get expanded access. Like, you need to be at risk of death, basically. I was. So I got approved through the expanded access. And I mean, it's just at this point, I'm guesstimating I'm about like 50 or 60% better already than I was last October. For example, I just yesterday, for the first time in 5 years, I was well enough to drive my own self to the gym. I did a 20-minute workout and I drove home. I have not been able to do that in 5 years. The fact that I'm getting out of the house again for a long, long while, I was so sick that even if somebody would have drove me somewhere, I was so sick I just couldn't even, I would have just laid in the back seat and I wouldn't even been able to get out. So it wasn't even worth trying to drive me anywhere, and I certainly couldn't drive myself. It was way beyond my scope at that time.
Have you worked in the dental industry, or did your condition come at a time that just made it so impossible that you never started?
So I managed to work for 3.5 years in my career as a dental hygienist, which is a little sad after four, it took me almost 4 years in college. But yeah, my health was too poor. I couldn't maintain. We had started reducing my patients per day, and I was mixing between doing hygiene work and doing front desk work, which was incredibly frustrating, you know, to not be able to use my degree and do and see my patients, which I loved. But, and then it got to the point where I couldn't even do that anymore. I just was not well enough. So what I did is I got with vocational rehab pretty much right away. And they did a bunch of different testing on me and kind of tried to figure out like where I was, what my abilities were. And I worked with them on and off for honestly several years. It took me several years to figure out what I could do because I kept having ideas and then my health would progress, you know, negatively so quickly, like I said, every 6 months. And then I'd realize like, oh, wow, I'm actually not going to be able to do that. So finally, after like 4 or 5 years, though, back and forth with them, I figured out I wanted to be a pet nutritionist. And it was something that I could do online at home in my own time, get the training. And so that's what I did. I signed up with this. There's a great little college in New Jersey called the Natural Health Science Institute, I think. And they offer all kinds of different classes there, some in person, but some online. And so I got my clinical pet nutritionist certification. And then I went back actually the year and a half later, and I became a certified master pet herbalist. And I started offering online consultations to people with pets who are dealing with, ironically, chronic illnesses. So, which is very, it was very, very full circle for me because obviously I learned a ton in the programs, but I can't tell you how much I bring to my, to serving these pets just through my own experience fighting mito for the last decade and a half. There's so many little nuances there.
Are you open with your clients about your health issues, or?
I am.
What a great way to help people. I mean, you're helping their pets, obviously, but you're also helping them. They love their pets and they're seeking out answers and you're giving them those answers. I think that's so wonderful. And all these opportunities, virtually speaking, I wouldn't have even connected to MitoAction. Would you have if it weren't for like social media?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I would have just Googled them, but.
Right, because you're so good at that. How did you find MitoAction? How did you get involved?
You know, I can't remember like the very first way I found MitoAction. I don't know. Maybe it was through Google. I don't know. But maybe it was through social media. But yeah, it was somewhere along the journey, like what, 7-8 years ago now. I remember how I felt when I found MitoAction was instantly like, yes, like this feels like my people, you know, because as you know, there's other mitochondrial organizations out there as well. And I had been trying to connect with another one and I just didn't feel that connection.
Yes, I couldn't agree with that more. So let's tell everyone how you are involved. I mean, as a patient, obviously, I know that you take advantage of a lot of what MitoAction has to offer. But beyond that, how do you, in a more professional way, help MitoAction?
Yeah, so, you know, initially, the biggest thing that I enjoyed was doing the weekly support groups for patients. Love that, especially once, you know, Zoom came around and it was video. It was just so amazing and wonderful to alleviate that isolation and that loneliness feeling of battling this thing, you know. And just slowly over time, you know, I just started seeing different opportunities and like stepping into different roles of like, well, what else could I do to help, you know? So I have always been big on social media with all of my pet business stuff. I know social media well from that. I know Facebook, Instagram, all this, and would always be there. So I just started being really active in the mitochondrial, in our MitoAction Facebook group. I just would be posting like multiple times a week, just lots of like encouraging things. And like, this is what I'm doing with my life. And like, you know, hey guys, look, like I raked some leaves today. That's my big like win for the day. And, you know, and so at some point in time, you know, one of the staff members at MitoAction, they were like, well, would you be interested in being an admin on our Facebook group? I'm like, sure, I'm in Facebook every day working anyway. So sign me up, you know? And so I'm doing that now. I pretty much run the group, I guess. I mean, I go in there and welcome new members and we, you know, we allow people to put their email address so they can sign up to receive our newsletter if they want to get more information and be connected. And, you know, and I just kind of monitor the group and I try to do like a fun thing in there every week, something engaging, ask questions, run polls. You know, of course it's very, sometimes the group feels very heavy, feels very dragged down by suffering, you know, suffering and illness, loss, death, which is fine. That's understandable that the space is needed for that. But I try really hard to bring like this light and this like energy, good energy and positivity and encouragement.
I think you do a great job. If I were to describe what I would think was going through your head, it would be that you are trying to connect us more beyond the suffering. And then obviously we'll be there for each other during the suffering. But what else, you know, how else can we kind of chat virtually? And what can we learn about each other? Because we all do have backgrounds that aren't mitochondrial disease related. It's not everything that I speak about in my daily life. And many people don't even know that I'm dealing with a condition like this. But I do. I feel really at peace when I'm looking through posts and reading comments. And so you do a fabulous job with it. A great combination of giving hope. And I know you do some updates on how you're feeling too with the drug and how the progress has been made. And hopefully you're giving some light for others too, and giving them ideas on what they might be able to do or to feel good about that one win a day. You know, I am very thrilled that you are doing this for MitoAction. They're very lucky to have you.
I'm lucky to have the group. Like, honestly, you know, yeah, I do it to encourage others, but it's also this thing. It's this beacon. It's this beacon that keeps me going and keeps me motivated as well. And on my most dark days, I battle depression. There's some really hard days. And it's like, okay, April, motivate yourself to just make a post and try to encourage others. And like, it helps me to, you know, to help think of others. And then you're less involved in your own misery at that moment, you know? So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do this, because it helps me in my life as well. you know, and yeah, it was, it's been a really nice opportunity with the expanded access. I'm allowed to post about it because I'm not in the actual clinical trial. So I have some freedom there, which is nice. And so I've been able to be doing these weekly updates and telling people, like, here's the improvements I'm having. And, you know, it's really bringing a lot of hope to thousands and thousands of people who are suffering right now, and they wish they could get in the trial, but for various reasons were not accepted. And, you know, the trial could only take so many people. And I just keep trying to tell everybody right now, like, you know, what I needed to hear a few years ago when I was losing hope, like, please don't lose hope, because these medications are coming, these treatments are coming, and elmepartide isn't even the only one. There's several ones coming down the chute now. And some of the leading mitochondrial specialists out there now are starting to drop the words about cure. Like, they're actually starting to audibly talk about a cure in like another decade. So I'm just trying to hold on to that, you know, that beacon of hope, our little green heart that I wave all the time, you know, like, hold on, guys, hold on.
You do a fantastic job. So you should be really proud of yourself. That's a tough job. And you feel like you need to lift other people up too when they're posting about their journey and their difficulties, and giving people hope, you know, throughout your week can be challenging, I'm sure, you know, so I give you a lot of credit. So let's hear a little bit about April, not related to the mitochondrial disease. So you really like animals, I'm guessing.
I do. I'm an animal geek, a pet geek, I guess. I could just talk about pets all day, every day.
What pets do you have of your own?
So currently I have one hairless sphinx cat. His name is Stubborn. He's about to turn 9 this year. And then I have a standard poodle named Bailey. She's 5 and a half, and she's I trained her to be my service dog.
You trained her?
Well, with help through PetSmart. Took her for all the classes, and she went through, you know, started at puppy classes, went all the way through therapy dog training, got her canine good citizen certificate. And then just at home, I trained her to do a few service tasks for me working with a private in-home trainer. So yeah, I had a lot of help, but you know.
Okay. So what's some advice you would give to our listeners if they are contemplating the idea of bringing a service animal into their lives?
I really would suggest, if you don't have dog allergies, reach out to a organization that does this, that does raise the puppies and train them specifically, because it takes all the work out of it for you. Mostly, you know, they raise them until they're ready, and then you go stay there for usually, I think it's like a week, get paired with the right dog. For me, that was not an option because of my dog allergies, and all the organizations around me that I could find only offered golden retrievers or Labrador retrievers, which are wonderful dogs, but my asthma cannot handle them. So, you know, I had the added stress and expense of, like, actually I just found a breeder and, you know, adopted her as a puppy and raised her up and did all that. And, you know, I'm lucky that it worked, because I know many other people that tried to do that and it didn't end up working out for whatever reason. The dog's personality wasn't right, or people in the home just didn't, you know, operate the way they should have so that it would be a service dog, and just various things like that. So I love what the organizations out there do, you know, the good ones. There's a main organization where you can go to, and it will list out all the different service dog organizations by state. I cannot remember the name of that organization right now, but if people just do a little digging, you can find that and find the organizations near you. And for me, it's great. She, you know, she doesn't do a lot of tasks for me because there's not really a lot she can do, because, you know, my stuff is like just great, you know, severe fatigue and muscle weakness and stuff. So, you know, it's kind of like, if she could like do the dishes and make my meals, that'd be great, you know, but she can't. So, but what I have trained her to do for me that's very helpful is I trained her to do grounding. So she knows like to lay across my legs or lay across like my chest. If I'm having like really bad anxiety, that's really helpful. She grounds me. Or if I'm having like a lot of leg muscle pain, or a few years ago I was hospitalized and they had to give me a steroid because I was having breathing trouble. My body freaks out with steroids and everything shakes. All my muscles clench and shake like crazy. So it was really nice to have her lay on my legs, and she helped conserve my energy that way, because I wasn't losing so much energy by all my muscles shaking so bad because she was grounding me. And then last year I got a grant through a wonderful organization for a walking mobility harness for her. So it's a beautiful leather harness and it has a rigid handle so that it comes up to where I stand. And so now as my health has improved on the allemepritide and I'm not wheelchair dependent anymore, I'm actually able to just get out of the vehicle and walk with her with this mobility harness. So it's just made my life so much easier. Just get her out of the car and grab her handle and away we go. So yeah.
Wow.
So she's providing a really, really big service for me that way. Like yesterday when I went to the gym, it would have been very hard to navigate through all that equipment and all those people in my power wheelchair or even with my walker and the dog next to me. It's a lot to manage. So yeah, so she's just, and of course, just general emotional support, you know.
I was going to ask if she helps overall with like the feelings of depression on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, I have a permanent best friend here with me, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a human, you know, she doesn't really talk back, but you know, it's.
Sometimes it's better that way.
Dogs are amazing company anyway, yes.
Right. So I that's so wonderful. I'm so glad that this relationship with your dog has, that it worked for you. You know, I can understand where in some instances it might not, but I'm really thankful that in your case it did. And it sounds like there are a lot of services out there. So if a family would be interested in one, maybe they should go down that route if they don't want to deal with all of the training on their own. It sounds like you have a way with animals though. So
yeah, aside from the pets, you know, I love what I do with my consultation work and that keeps me busy. And by nature, I was a very, very athletic person my whole life before, you know, I had so many health challenges. So I still just try to do whatever I can there. Like even when I wasn't well enough to go to a gym anymore, I tried to always do like my physical therapy at home. I love doing yoga. I love putting on a yoga video, even if I can't even do remotely, you know, one iota of the moves that they're actually doing, but just pretending and like trying along, like it's fun for me. And a few months ago, I got a recumbent e-bike, and that's been amazing that I can be able to ride a bike again because I haven't been able to do that for several years, just needing to sit up on the bike for extended period of time and then pedal way too much for my body. But in this bike, you're like leaned back, you're reclined back. So it takes a lot of the strain off all those core muscles, lets my heart and my breathing be more relaxed. And I can gently pedal. And then if the road gets too hard, then you just turn on the assistance and the motor kicks in and it helps you go down the road. So, or sometimes, like just recently, I got really sick. Unfortunately, I acquired it's not actually diagnosed, but we think it was West Nile illness from a mosquito. Yep. Good times.
What?
I highly recommend using bug repellent at all times. Because that was very not fun, but I got very, very weak, was just really, really struggling to even walk. But it was so wonderful because I could just jump on this bike and I could still take my dog and we'd go on his old bike rides even when I wasn't well enough to pedal at all. So that this electric bike has been really, really an amazing gift in my life.
That has to be so tough though, to be so athletic and then to just know that you can't do the things that you were once able to do. I mean, I know I struggle with that a lot. I was never athletic, but there's a lot of things that I can't do now that I was able to do then. And it's a really tough mindset then to see, you know, my contemporaries continuing on the paths, you know, that we were on together. But you have such a great attitude. I was going to ask if you're able to take your dog on the bike rides with this recumbent bike, but it sounds like you can.
Yeah, I found this great thing on Amazon. They call it a dog bike leash. And it's essentially just a steel pole that you attach to the bike. So then they're 2.5 feet out from the bike with their little tether. So it keeps them at a safe enough distance from the bike, but still close enough to you. And so that's great. It's so easy. I just clip her in there and away we go.
You seem like such a problem solver. And you seem like you're so good at finding answers of obviously using the internet, which some people are not that good at doing, or some people aren't that willing, or I mean, you have the patience and you found so many ways to make your life so much better.
When you were saying about athletic, one thing I remind myself is even now when, you know, I struggle to do very simple tasks with my body, but I remind myself that I'm still an athlete in here. And so I still have that mindset of I'm up for a challenge, right? I'm an athlete. I'm willing to push myself. I'm willing to fight for things, like, you know, so yeah, I try to hold on to that fighting spirit in myself and kind of use that in all aspects.
As a crossover.
Yeah, and I just try to look at, you know, I'm certainly far, far from perfect at this, but I try very hard to look at the hard things in life instead of suffering, which this disease certainly is suffering. It certainly brings suffering. But instead of focusing on the suffering and the loss and the pain and just all of that, I try to think, okay, April, you said you like challenges. So I try to always remind myself to look at every hardship as a challenge, because if I look at it that way, then it doesn't feel like it drags me down as much. And it gives me an opportunity to grow. What do we do through challenge in life? What do we do living through challenges? We grow as humans. We expand, you know, we become a better version of ourselves. So I've been trying my best for the last 15 years. And even earlier than that, honestly, I had some really hard childhood experiences and stuff. And I've just been trying to just every day, just be a little bit better version of myself, like 0.001% better version of myself than the day before, and just keep on trucking on, you know, just try to have the best quality of life possible despite Mito.
Yeah. I want to conclude with a question. Are there any like meaningful experiences that you've had as the social media coordinator for Mito Action that you would want to share with our audience?
I mean, honestly, I can't think of like a standout moment. It's just like 1,000 little moments, actually, like every single week. So I have this little routine when, for example, when people apply to our group, you know, the Facebook group asks certain questions and it's like, how are you connected to Mito? You know, are you a patient? Like, what's your diagnosis if you have it, whatnot? I found that to be a very challenging place because here I am just sitting behind a computer screen in my bedroom alone. And I'm seeing these people's pain. I'm seeing answers like, my son just got diagnosed and my daughter passed away last year. And, you know, I'm in here because my sister is, you know, struggling and sick and, you know, just all these things, again, all that hard and that, you know, deep. And so I've started a little routine when I'm adding people to the list, you know, they've left their email and they want our newsletter or whatever, and I'm approving them to the group, that I just take a moment with everybody. I really read their name thoroughly and I say a little prayer and then I click approve. And it's just this little routine and habit I've gotten into. And I don't know, just again, it makes me feel like I'm doing at least a little something for these families and the pain that they're going through or, you know, have found themselves up against. There's a lot of moments like that and just people's response to my posts, you know, different things I've heard, especially from a lot of parents who have teenage daughters with mitochondrial disease right now. And they love seeing me live my life on the internet so that they can watch and they see that, okay, I did lose my career, but you know what? I managed to graduate with a degree. Potentially, you know, if I had known I had mitochondrial disease and chosen a different career, I probably could have sustained longer. But you know, I graduated, I had a career, I've bought a home, I have pets. I now do this, you know, part-time consulting business. I've been married and divorced, but, you know, I have lived a full life despite Mito, even despite getting, you know, I first had chronic illness symptoms at 25 years old. So, you know, it's been since pretty early adulthood. So, you know, that's really key place. I think that I play this good role is this good role model is to those, you know, to those teenage young women that are affected and their parents to see that you can still do this. You can have a full life.
Well, our community is very lucky to have you, April, and your strength is infectious. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. We can continue to enjoy April's posts on Facebook, on the Mito Action Facebook page, and we wish you nothing but the best. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Marcy. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I'm so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.